Hello and welcome to our food principles module. Our food principles module is all about the different kinds of ways of eating that can be used therapeutically with our clients and explaining how to know when to use a particular type of food regime and when is not a good idea and what some of the benefits are and then how to do it. So today's topic is macrobiotics. And I'm very excited to introduce our guest speaker for today's topic, who is a very experienced macrobiotic person. She is trained in macrobiotics and knows about it for many years, is very well versed in the art of using food as medicine, which is what macrobiotics kind of does. It balances the foods to the person's body type, the personality, etc., and is used very therapeutically and very effectively. So I want you to meet Lynn DeBuer Johnson, one of our own students and an amazing healer. So Lynn, take it away and thank you for being here.
So as Dr. Rita Marie mentioned that my very first certification was in macrobiotics. And so this was a good opportunity for me to go back and review some of the things, even though I had been using them in my own life and practice on some level, I really was grateful for this opportunity to go back in and rediscover something and actually grew a new love for it and a deeper love, because now I have that based on the information that I'm receiving through this course. So I hope that as I present this to you, that it helps deepen your understanding of nutrition and diet and the information that we share with our clients, so that they also understand that diet isn't just something that we go on for 30 days, lose weight, and that's it. In fact, the word diet, both in the Greek and the Latin, it means more about a way of living. It isn't just the food we eat. It has to do with a regular daily work, and so that's something also to keep in mind as we consider telling people that they're on a diet. A diet isn't just the food we eat. It's a way of living. And so that's a really good segue into our medical disclaimer. So the information that I'm presenting to you isn't intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified healthcare professional. It's not intended as medical advice. I would even go so far to say I don't want to give medical advice. I like the land that I live in and the way I present materials to people, which is that I share my education with them. And so what I'm doing today with you is sharing my knowledge and information from my research and my experience, whether it be through Dr. Rita Marie or my many years of information in this field. So I encourage you to make your own healthcare decisions based on your research and in partnership with someone you consider a qualified healthcare professional. This presentation is provided for informational purposes only, and there are no guarantees, promises, representations, or warranties of any kind regarding specific or general benefits that have been or will be made by Dr. Rita Marie, her affiliates, or any of us. So what does macrobiotic mean? The term macrobiotic comes from the Greek, meaning macro, which means large or long, and then bios, meaning life. So this means that we intend on having a macrobiotic experience, whether it be through diet or other lifestyle changes, that will help us to have a long life. And the term was first coined by Hippocrates, who we all know is the father of Western medicine. And, you know, Hippocrates has a famous quote that Dr. Rita Marie often says that first of all, he says, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And then he says, make a habit of two things to help or at least to do no harm. And so that should almost be my our disclaimer that we put for ourselves, is that we're not going to do any harm. Okay, so we're going to do a little bit of early history. And actually, I'm going to go back a little bit further. You'll see a lot of references to the Japanese. And way back, like in the early 1600s, there was an emperor that during his reign, his name was Emperor Temu, and he declared an edict against eating domestic animals. And so the Japanese people used to consider eating animals, and especially dairy, to be an abomination. And they felt that it would make one into a cow. So that was a big start of things. There was also, they considered rice to be the food of the gods. In fact, they even said rice is the Buddha. That was their common belief. And so even before Dr. Hoogland came into being, this was already set up in the Asian cultures. There was also a gentleman that I didn't reference here, but as I was reviewing my notes, I thought I would mention to you. His name was Ekin Kaibara. He lived during the 1630s to the early 1700s, and he's also from Japan. And he believed that physical well-being and long life were the natural condition of mankind, that sickness was created by man, and so therefore we could be uncreated. He has a quote that says, it is only natural that one who has learned health preservation and who applies it will become strong in body, will shirk off all diseases, and live to the age Providence meant him to live, and enjoy it too. And I know that as we work with our clients, that is something that we really try hard to convey to them, that being healthy is our natural condition. So this brings us to Dr. Hoogland, who was considered the inventor of the term macrobiotics. He wrote a book in 1796 called The Art of Prolonging Life. And the reason this is important is because He was known for his advancements in pediatrics. He did a lot with child rearing, public health, and in this particular book, he focused on prevention, and as it says in the title, prolonging one's life. He believed that the life force that is within us, which permeates all life, can be strengthened or weakened through external forces. He also believed that our moral and physical health are intertwined and flow from the same force. I have a quote there from him that my opinion is that more harm than good is done by physicians, and I am convinced that had I left my patients to nature instead of prescribing drugs, more would have been saved. And another reason that Well, I'll go into another reason why he is, he comes into the picture a little bit later, but I wanted to set the table with him first. So then we come to Seigen Ishizuka, who lived much later at the turn of the other century when Western influence was starting to be felt in Japan. So as it says here on the slide, he was a Japanese army doctor. And he believed that the human health depended upon the proper balance in the body between the salts of sodium and potassium. And just a little more background upon Dr. Ishizuka. He had also studied a lot of the ancient Japanese practices, and he was starting to see this decline in the physical and psychological health of the Japanese people with this introduction of Western foods. He had helped heal a lot of people by reintroducing the foods that were native to the Japanese diet, which is rice, vegetables, sea vegetables, minimal fruit, and in some cases, if necessary, little fish or wild fowl. He, as I say, he had done quite a bit of studying on the balance of sodium and potassium. He also believed that man is a natural cereal or whole grain eater, because he said that 5/8 of our teeth are best suited for chewing grain. He considered the vegetables, sea vegetables, and the rest of the foods as supplemental to whole grains. So he also subscribed to the idea that we should eat seasonally, that physical exercise is important to get rid of excess salts, and that the foods produced most naturally and abundantly in the environment should make up the majority of the diet. He also did a lot of studying in different environments to research the effects of choices of food. So he found that populations that lived closer to the sea, where there is a higher intake of sodium in the soil and the air, the water, therefore the food, they tended to be shorter, stockier, more physically active and aggressive, and more materialistically oriented. He felt that they were more ambitious, dualistic thinking, and in some extreme cases, they tended towards more violence. He found that those who lived in the plains had a higher potassium level, and they were taller, more slender. They had less physical strength, but greater endurance and flexibility. He also found that they were more spiritually oriented rather than materially, and that they displayed more good-heartedness and the strength of spirit. He also found that those who had a plant-based diet were those who lived in the central plains, and that they also had a more peaceful and spiritually oriented demeanor than those who ate more animal-based or higher sodium foods. So now we're going to go to George Osawa. If you're at all familiar with macrobiotics, you may have heard his name. He is considered the father of the modern macrobiotic movement. So he was born in 1893 and died in 1966. He developed tuberculosis at age 15. The other piece to that, though, is that most of his family was sick with this and had died because of it. And so that he decided for himself this was not going to be. He was not going to have this happen to him. And so he set off to study as much as possible. And because of that, he actually met the descendant of Dr. Hufeland, and that's when he started learning about macrobiotics. He was very intelligent. He was well-versed in many languages, one of which was German, which is why he was able to talk to him. He based his theories, his practices of macrobiotics on Dr. Sagan Ishizuka's theory with the balancing of the mineral salts. But he also focused a lot on, as you study more about him, he studied a lot about more the philosophies, what they call the I Ching, the yin yang, and so this is why macrobiotics is not just a philosophy of our food and even our health. It's a lifestyle. And so his quote here, the only law of Chinese medicine is explained in four words, Xin Do Fu Ji, which means man is the result of his environment. And so there's actually there are shifts also that you will hear or read about between George Osawa and the next person I'll talk about, which is Michio Kushi. And you'll also see in here that I mention their wives as well. Their wives were very predominant in their lives because they're the ones who actually applied the materials that were being used. And the wives and all three of the people that I'll be talking about worked with George Osawa, and so then met their prospective husbands. The other interesting thing about George Osawa is that he wasn't supposed to have lived, and he lived to the age of 73. Because he applied these principles to himself. So this may be the person that you might be most familiar with in terms of macrobiotics, and that's Michio Kushi. Michio and Aveline Kushi started the Kushi Institute in Boston. And Michio worked and met and had lots of conversations with George Osawa. And Aveline actually worked with him first in their kitchens. And so she was aware of Michio and communicated with him once he was in the United States back and forth, but she had never met him. And then she decided to move to the United States, and she met him, and then they married shortly thereafter. So there's kind of an interesting love story there as well. And again, Michio was very intelligent. He came from a family of educators, and he was raised in both Eastern and Western philosophy, so that he spent a lot of time, and this is where he and George Osawa really spent time together discussing, because they really had this deep love for world peace, and that's where the macrobiotic diet stemmed from, is that they wanted people to find peace within themselves. And again, this just goes along with everything that we learned through Dr. Rita Marie and her passion, which is that if people are healthy, they're happy and they have peace. So there would be worldwide peace. The Kushis are also the founder of the Erewhon brand of natural foods. They also founded East West Journal, and the East West Foundation, all of which are still in existence. And as I mentioned before, they are the ones that are most renowned at this point with macrobiotics. When you think of macrobiotics, people have a tendency to think of the Kushis, the Kushi Institute. And his quote that I picked was, "Unless people become healthy and peaceful-minded from the heart, naturally, there is no peace in the world." And the last couple that I'm going to introduce, because I felt that all three of these couples played a really great role in the introduction of macrobiotics to the United States are Herman and Cornelia Ihara. Again, Herman studied with George Osawa. He actually founded the George Osawa Macrobiotic Foundation, the Vega Institute, and he's out in California. It still exists in Oroville. So we have the Kushi Institute on the East Coast and the George Osawa Foundation and the Vega Institute on the West Coast. And this is another case, too, where Cornelia studied first with George Osawa in his kitchens and communicated with Herman and came across to the United States sight unseen and met him. And so I guess I'm just enough of a hopeless romantic to maybe someday hope to learn more about that. And so what's really important in all of this is that all three of these individuals realized that diet isn't, it doesn't exist on its own. It's something that it brings us a wholeness and a oneness. And as he says here, macrobiotics amounts to finding our physiological limitations and trying to live within them. This is the cultivation of humble. When we think that we can do anything we want, we become arrogant. This arrogance causes sickness. So this is the macrobiotic approach to diet and health. They have an emphasis on whole grains and fresh vegetables. For the most part, it avoids meat, dairy foods, and processed foods. And the goal is to provide the body with essential nutrients so that it can function efficiently without loading it with toxins or excesses that must be eliminated or stored. Since the body is always adjusting to changes in the environment and in its own aging process, its needs will always change as well. And we often hear that every time you put something into your body, it changes. So that while a month ago you felt you could eat all these different foods, you eat the foods, your body changes. And so then you're going to adjust your diet for that. And the idea is to balance the effects of foods eaten with other influences on the body, largely through diet, and to adjust to changes in a controlled and peaceful manner. Again, this speaks to what we talk about with eating. So we suggest to our clients that you eat in that peaceful environment. You take that moment to de-stress before you put anything into your body. And I'll talk more about that as we go along. As I've mentioned before, macrobiotic is not just a diet. It's also a way of thinking. So all things, our body, food, everything, the air, the soil, everything is composed of yin and yang energies. You'll often hear about the law of opposites. And this is represented in the idea of yin and yang. And so one is dark, one is light, one is masculine, one is feminine. And but with either one of them, while we have both of them at the same time in our body, one is always going to be stronger than the other. It's not that you're always going to be an excess of yin. It means that at one point in time, you'll have an excess of yin, and then you make an adjustment to balance it out. But it may be that some more yang energy comes into that. And so there's always that balance. And it's not a matter of judgment or that it's that you need to be one or the other. It's just always a recognition of that movement. Most of the foods that make up the standard American diet will have either a very strong yin or a very strong yang characteristic. And so that's what makes it acid forming. So you'll often hear, or if you go out to eat, you'll see where they'll have steak and potatoes. And so one is very yin and one is very yang. And so you need that to balance it out, because otherwise, if you just ate nothing but the steak, you're going to be completely unbalanced. And so the potato actually balances it, even though it's very hard on the body because it has to make this really big, long shift to get it from the yang to the yin. And this is why macrobiotics emphasized grain and vegetables as the two foods, because they saw them as the closest to being most balanced, that they had the least pronounced yin and yang qualities. So that would make it easier to achieve a more balanced condition within that person's life. And so living within this natural order means eating only what is necessary for that person's condition, and to have a peaceful life. If you really follow these principles, you'll understand that for some people, eating more vegetables or eating a type of vegetable will bring them more of that balance. And that's one of the things that we learn here. The reason why, again, you see this pronunciation on the grains and the vegetables, especially rice, is because the people who brought it over brought what they knew worked for them, and that was rice. If you, again, extrapolate and take push forward the idea of the macrobiotic thoughts, what is going to best balance that person's life? And that's what you're trying to achieve, is that they have that balance of eating. And that's not even just their food. It's what are they doing in their life to help keep them in that balance. So learning the effects of different foods allows one to consciously counteract other influences and maintain a dynamically balanced state. And the resulting freedom from fear and the new sense of control are two of the most important benefits of the macrobiotic practice. So along with eating, having that balance with your sleep, having that balance with fun and pleasure, having that balance within your living environment so that you don't have an excess, so you don't have an excess of clutter or an excess of cleanliness, that you don't spend too much time in work, but that you have a balance with fun along with that work. A macrobiotic practice. This encourages the body's natural ability to heal itself, because you're providing it with that space that it's in balance and it can provide the actions within the body to heal itself. So if the body is not burdened by toxins and excesses, it can function better and thus heal any illness that does occur. Anybody who begins a macrobiotic diet goes through a period of healing, beginning with the elimination of accumulated toxins and excesses. And I personally liken this to if you're going to go in and paint a room, but the room is a mess, you can't paint the room around the mess. You have to clean the mess up first. And this is, to me, that's what this is saying. You, before you can really heal, you need to start ridding the body of any of these accumulated toxins and excesses. Those who are already following a macrobiotic diet may also have periodic health problems and can adjust their diets accordingly. So while you're ridding your body of toxins, it may put your body into some type of a healing crisis of its own. So that's, again, where you have to balance it out. Doing a cleanse isn't good if it's going to throw more toxins into your system. So doing maybe a gentle cleanse would be better. Or not even cleansing at all, but tonifying your body is going to be better. So again, it's just that balance of yin and yang, of lightness and darkness, the law of opposites. And as I mentioned before, of course, there are factors other than diet that affect health. True macrobiotic practice emphasizes balancing extremes in all areas. The goal of macrobiotics is not to avoid death, which is part of the cycle of life, but it seeks to ensure that each person's life is long, healthy, and enjoyable. And I think we can all agree on that. This is a macrobiotic pyramid for display purposes. I personally don't like to see a pyramid because that or anything like this because it represents separation. Our life is actually a whole. If I did something, I would make a circle and I would have us in that circle in some place, but we're surrounded by the different parts of our life, whether it be food, other people that we care for. It's an integrated whole. It's not whole grains on the bottom, vegetables and pickles on the top of that. There's that, it goes to that symmetry and balance. But looking at this, you can again see where whole grains are, they feel that's the biggest part of the diet. 40 to 60% of daily food by weight, they have some ideas here for foods. And then as you work with people, if you, you can, and they feel that they need to be on a macrobiotic diet, you can go over some of this with them and discuss with them why or why not this may not be the best for the balance in their body. And it should be noted that they say that noodles, pasta, bread, that any cereal flour products should be really minor, if at all. They emphasize whole grain. And then 20 to 30% of the diet by weight with vegetables, the balance of it, the majority of it being green leafy vegetables, followed by root vegetables. They talk about the shape with being round as having its own type of energy that spins within us and helps, can be part of the healing process. They say that the majority of the food should be cooked and a minor portion should be salad or raw foods. And then they also emphasize pickles and other types of fermented foods with it. And then comes bean products and sea vegetables. Everything else after that is minimal, whether it be seasonings, condiments. So you can see there's a real emphasis on whole foods with this. Those are the foods daily, weekly, and you'll sometimes hear it termed secondary are things like the sweet foods, seeds, nuts, fruits, and then the occasional, which is also oftentimes called the third layer, is if used at all, is dairy, eggs, poultry, and meat. I'm going to go into some more information on this through the rest of the presentation. So as I mentioned on the pyramid, whole grains, cereal grains, 40 to 60% by weight, preferably organically grown. If you can find biodynamically grown, that's even better. You can cook it in a variety of ways. You can roast it, steam it. They don't emphasize a lot of boiling per se. When I was a macrobiotic chef, I would often use my pressure cooker to prepare the grains for people. And while whole grains are recommended, a small portion of the recommended percentage of grains may consist of noodles or pasta, unyeasted whole grain breads, and other partially processed whole cereal grain. Some of the grains that they recommend are brown rice, barley, millet, oats, corn, rye, wheat, and buckwheat. And the oats are not the rolled oat, it's the oat grain. So that, again, it goes back to the whole grain. So vegetables. So, and this is something that I still like to use a lot of. Local, organically grown vegetables are recommended and in their season. They recommend, again, cooking, so lightly steamed or boiled. When you lightly steam, that doesn't necessarily mean that you cook it to death. Many of you may have memories of mushy, gray broccoli or maybe even spinach. You weren't quite sure what that was, and that is definitely not what we're talking about here. When you steam it, it should become bright green and just have enough pliability to it so that you can chew it. You can saute it with a small amount of unrefined cold pressed oil. They really like to use sesame oil along with some others. You can use a small portion as a fresh salad and some as pickles. The vegetables that they often recommended for daily use were the green cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, collards, pumpkin, watercress, parsley, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, dandelion, mustard greens, daikon, scallions, onions, daikon radishes, turnips, burdock, and that would be the root, carrots, and winter squash, such as butternut, buttercup, and acorn squash. For occasional use, when it's in their season, which again is what they call a secondary, which is 2 to 3 times a week, that would be cucumbers, celery, lettuce, and herbs such as dill and chive. Vegetables that aren't recommended for use, you'll recognize them as the nightshade. So that would be potatoes, tomatoes, eggplant, peppers, spinach, along with beets and zucchini. The next category is the beans and sea vegetables. Together, these would be about 5 to 10% by weight of the meat. The one that they recommend the most are the adzuki beans. They feel that those are the most easily digestible, and that would be followed by chickpeas and lentils. It doesn't mean that you don't use any of the others, but you would use them depending upon your health that you're trying to balance with. Other bean products that they recommend are tofu, tempeh, and natto. And again, they recognize that soybean is one of the toughest beans to digest. So all of these are something that have been fermented and aged. The sea vegetables that they recommend are nori, wakame, kombu, hijiki, arame, dulse, and agar-agar. The agar is used as a gel, so there may be times when you'll see that they'll combine that with maybe a fruit paste and make something that you could use. Also, they'll do it with juice, like a fruit juice, and you can make some type of a gelatin with that. Dulse, you'll see along with their fermentations that they'll put that in. The other piece to sea vegetables, and I know there's often concern that they might have some radiation or something like that in there. The sea vegetables, although they take that people, they're raised in waters that may possibly have some radiation in them, the nature of sea vegetables is that they don't take it in. That's why it's it's good for us to eat. What they do is they absorb. So if you eat it and you have anything in your body, such as radiation, it will absorb that, but it won't put it into your body. So the unfortunate thing that happens when it's raised in an environment that isn't ideal, it doesn't have as much room to absorb your radiation or any other toxin. Soup. So soup will be made with vegetables, sea vegetables, grains, beans, and this is where you can use the seasonings such as miso, tamari, or shoyu, which is a natural soy sauce. They are it's a wheat-free soy sauce, and then sea salt. If you go somewhere, when I lived in Minneapolis, one of the Cushy children lived there, and they would have on a regular basis, once a week, a traditional macrobiotic meal. And you always started out with soup, and it was always a miso soup. And then you would have each of these pieces on your plate. You will also find that in many macrobiotic families, they'll have actually miso soup for breakfast. There are many times when either I'm not feeling well or somebody else in my family isn't feeling well, I'll make them a miso soup and put things in there that are healing, like maybe some kombu or ginger, things like that. So soup is one of those, I wouldn't call it necessarily a daily food, but it can be if you incorporate the other pieces from the pure. And beverages. So the recommended beverages, well, water is, it's, you can drink it. They also like to see the use of, like the Kukicha twig tea, it's also known as Bansha tea, the stem tea, roasted brown rice tea, roasted barley tea, dandelion root tea, or a cereal grain coffee, because they feel that you will absorb the essences of this plant life as part of your healing. They do not, you won't see a lot of foods on here that are considered aromatic or stimulating, because you're trying to find that balance, and they feel some of those foods that are more stimulating will bring you off balance. They also recommend that if you do drink water, that you don't include ice with it. The other piece to when you drink the beverage on its own is considered almost sacred, and not just something you have a glass of while you're eating the rest of your food. And so they often recommend that you eat these or consume the beverages separately, which is actually something that we also talk about here in terms of not diluting the digestive enzyme. So fish is also considered an occasional food, definitely not something in the couple of years that I was attending their macrobiotic meals, maybe twice I saw fish at one of the meals. And they, if you're going to use fish, it would be a white meat fish. So that would be flounder, sole, cod, carp, halibut, and trout. And I think this goes back to the culture that this all came from, which was Japan. And a lot of these foods, these fish types, were more predominant there. When I had my children, one of the things I would do is I would get a carp from one of the Hmong families there, and I would take the bones and the head and everything and make like a ginger soup with this, and that would help with my milk production, because I don't think you see a lot of carp in the grocery stores. So fruit is an occasional food, just two or three times a week at the most. It always should be fresh. It can be dried, but you want to make sure that it's dried without any, it's not a chemically dried fruit. And again, local and organically grown fruits. So for example, I have an apple tree and, while I do use my dehydrator for some of that, there were many times I would just put them in pans outside and let the sun do it. If you live in a temperate climate, which is what I consider most of us do, you want to avoid tropical and semi-tropical fruit. So that means no bananas or pineapples or things like that. Your temperate climate fruits are your apples, pears, plums, peaches, apricots, berries, and melons. They do not advocate a frequent use of fruit juice. Again, whether or not they knew it, that has to do with that. And along with other life forces that happen when you separate the juice from the whole piece of. They consider nuts and seeds an occasional food, and the ones that they also recommend lightly roasting. Again, this comes back from tradition and culture. There was a great concern for food poisoning and E. coli specifically, and so they saw that lightly roasting would help kill any organisms. Nowadays, you might see people more frequently just with the soaking process. That helps a lot with that and helps the body to avoid that. But they had more of an emphasis on pumpkin seeds, sesame seeds, and sunflower seeds. They saw that peanuts were okay as an occasional snack, along with walnuts and pecans. It doesn't mean that you can't have any of the other nuts. I know I made, especially with Brazil nuts, I did a lot. I didn't as much with cashews or macadamias because they were considered more of a tropical nut. And so Brazil nuts, hazelnuts, or filberts, I would use those on occasion. Sweeteners were definitely an occasional food. They were not a predominant part of the meals that I did. I would go into people's homes and prepare their meals and then store them for them to eat throughout the week. I used a lot of rice syrup, but a small container of rice syrup would last me several months. Along with that, barley malt, amasaki, and mirin. I very rarely used mirin. The two I used the most were rice syrup and barley malt. Rice syrup is a lighter syrup, and I would use that in preparing more of the grain dishes. The barley malt I use predominantly in more of the bean dishes. You'll hear in Ayurveda, they talk about the sour taste, and they have the same idea within macrobiotics. And so they would use brown rice vinegar or umeboshi vinegar to create that sour taste. And so you will, if you're making your own salad dressing, these are the two vinegars that you would use. Again, it's an occasional food, so maybe once or twice a week you would use something. The condiments that they recommended were gomachio. I know Dr. Rita Marie has a liver-loving gomachio recipe that brings in a lot of the same principles. Like, it's a seasoning that's made with things like sesame seeds and so forth that you would use in place of they also recommend using seaweed powder, such as kelp powder, kombu powder, wakame, and other sea vegetables. You can actually find combinations. There's a sesame seaweed powder that you can get where they've roasted, lightly roasted the sesame seeds along with different seaweeds, and then pulverized them. Again, you would just use that. They often put that like on their rice or on some of their other cooked sea vegetables. Umeboshi plums. An umeboshi plum is actually really good. They would often eat a whole umeboshi plum after a meal to help with the digestion. And you could also get it as a paste. And you could mix that with other ingredients, oils, and so forth to make a salad dressing. It is very sour. And so the taste buds take a little getting used to on that. Teka I did not use as often, but it was one that they have recommended from time to time. Pickles and sauerkraut, and they need to be used made using sea salt. So frequently we use, you'll see in the stores where the pickles they're made with vinegar or some faster processing, and that is not what they recommend. They want more of this brine, and so it does take longer. I believe something like Bubby's would follow that same principle. Miso you'll frequently see. There's different types of miso. You don't have to have just a strictly soy miso. There's some that use chickpeas and so forth, but again, it's something that has that the bacteria in there that will help with your digestion. And then tamari and shoyu are used in place of salt as a seasoning. There are some additional dietary suggestions. Cooking oil should be vegetable quality only. They, as I said before, they often recommended sesame oil. I actually used a lot of corn oil when I did it because that was what was recommended. It was also probably close to 30 years ago, so genetic modifications were not as big a concern. Your salt should only be naturally processed sea salt. And then the traditional non-chemicalized shoyu or tamari soy sauce along with the miso were just seasonings. And so these were things that were just used in small amounts. Foods to eliminate. You may recognize a lot of these foods. They're often foods that we at times recommend for people to eliminate. So meat, animal fat, eggs, poultry, dairy products, including butter, yogurt, ice cream, milk, and cheese. Refined sugars, chocolate, vanilla, molasses, and honey. I did use vanilla in small amounts when I would make a baked good every now and then. I never used chocolate. Molasses, I don't think I ever used molasses. I used barley malt, and I never used honey. I used the rice syrup. Other foods that they suggested to eliminate, again, the tropical or semi-tropical fruits and fruit juices, soda, artificial drinks and beverages, coffee, colored tea, and then the aromatic stimulating tea, such as mint or peppermint. Also, artificially colored, preserved, sprayed, or chemically treated foods, along with refined or polished grains, flours, and anything along with that. Remember, canned, frozen, or irradiated foods. Hot, spicy foods. Many of the vinegars that you'll find in the stores, alcohol, anything like that. The thing with the spicy foods, they felt that stimulated the liver too much, which would stimulate the emotions and bring you out of that peaceful place. And here are some suggestions. Again, you'll be familiar with this. Eat only when hungry. A real emphasis on chewing. if we know it's good for your digestion and assimilation of nutrients, eat in that stress-free environment. Make sure you're sitting with good posture. Again, expressing that appreciation and gratitude for your food. They also only suggest eating 2 or 3 times a day. At that meal, though, you can eat as much as you want. If you're eating and chewing, you're going to eat, you're going to get enough. And it's best to leave the table satisfied, but not full. Only drink liquids when you're thirsty. So they don't say you need to drink 32 ounces at a day or 64 ounces, or they just say when you're thirsty. I know we'll often hear that if you are thirsty, then it's already too late. That was their suggestion. They suggest to go to bed before midnight. Again, not eating 2 or 3 hours before sleeping. Bathing is important, but you don't want a long hot bath or shower because they feel that will take the minerals out of your body. Any of your cosmetics or cleaning products should be natural and non-toxic. As much as possible, wear cotton clothing, especially for your undergarments, because that's the closest to your skin. Avoid wearing excessive accessories. So that's like not wearing a lot of bracelets or earrings, rings, things like that. And I think a lot of that goes back to the simplicity. I heard one person once say that if you focus so much on your outward appearance, you're not as concerned, you may not be as concerned about your inward appearance. Spending out time, your time outdoors is really important. Walking in the grass, at least a half hour every day, and getting that direct sunlight, and then having some type of movement, such as yoga or Tai Chi. Having plants in your house is really important. Having your windows open, even if it's keeping your house in good order. They recommend scrubbing the body with, even though they say not to have a hot bath or a shower, you can take a hot towel and scrub your body. They say to avoid using electric devices. It has the chi for our body is not good, and to use gas or a wood stove. Again, using earthenware, cast iron, or stainless steel cookware is better than the aluminum or Teflon. Minimize the frequent use of television or computers, and to make sure that you're shielded from the electromagnetic fields when you use a computer. And end the day with singing a happy song. And you don't have to wait till you end the day. Any time is good to have a happy song. I will not do that for you. And there's some references. There's obviously a great many more, but these are the ones that I refer to more frequently with my Aunt Macrobiotic. And that is the end of our Macrobiotic presentation.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.